Welcome to Flying Higher with host Gina Jones, author of Flying Between Heaven and Earth. Each Sunday, Gina highlights the efforts of conscious people that are empowering individuals with the universal knowledge and the spiritual tools to fly toward their highest potential. Now, here's Gina.
Good evening and welcome to Flying Higher. This is Gina Jones, glad to join you this evening, and many thanks to Karen Stone, who's been hosting the show the last few weeks. We have an exciting program for you tonight, and what an exciting time to be alive. It's certainly an tumultuous world in many ways these days. Change is even changing. This is a life-changing program that has the power to help replace fear with love, and as we try to answer questions about the true purpose of our lives and where we're ultimately going. And our guest tonight is one who can certainly shed some light on that from multiple levels and multiple dimensions. Tonight our guest is Carla Rukert McCarty, and we're excited to have her here. She has been instrumental in my life in many ways, and the material that she has brought forth has changed the life for many, many people here on the planet. And it's our pleasure to introduce Carla. Are you with us?
Yes, I am, Gina. It's good to be with you this evening. Thanks a lot for the kind word.
It's certainly my pleasure, and I appreciate your being up. Carla is coming to us from Anchorage. It sounds so weird. Anchorage,
just
Kentucky.
Just outside of Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, we're used to Anchorage, Alaska, so I had to...
Well, this is an Anchorage Ohio River pilot that used to have a steamboat on the Ohio, and he put his anchor down when he settled in Anchorage, Kentucky. But it's Louisville, actually.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, we're glad to have you with us. You are certainly an extraordinary person, an extraordinary woman, and a messenger for all of us, and I'm so excited to have you on Flying Higher this evening so that you can share with us so much that you have done, and of course it's going to be a little hard to do that in just the 50 minutes that we have, but maybe you could just sort of bring our listeners up to speed about who you are and what you've been doing. I know that you've spent a lot of time in the Louisville area, and you've went to school there, and you've attended college and got your master's and worked as a librarian, and then somewhere along the way, you met Don Elkins. Maybe you can sort of pick up after that point and tell us who Don is and what happened after that.
Don Elkins was a professor of engineering at the Speed Scientific School at University of Louisville, and started an experiment in ET communication because he had been looking into UFOs since the middle 50s. He found some information about being able to get in contact with guidance that was not from the inner planes, but was from an outer source, sometimes described as a UFO source, sometimes not. And he wanted to test whether or not this kind of way of gathering information was viable. And in 2007, over 40 years later, we're still pursuing the possibility of this kind of communication, and have on our website quite a few transcripts of channeling sessions so that people can see what we have been up to all along. As far as I can see, we are one of many, many small and large groups of people who have rather awakened to the feeling that they have something that they want to do in this life that has to do with an incredible shift of energy that we're experiencing at this time. And some people describe that as lightening the planet. And the whole feeling is that we're all sort of lighthouses or groups made of light workers, which are trying to allow the Creator's light to shed through us into the world and just help people wake up to who they are, why they're here, and what they can do to be a part of this incredible shift of consciousness that's going on, because it's certainly no elite or unique thing for people to be able to be a part of this. It's as much, it's as simple as deciding that, yes, I think I am worth listening to, and yes, my guidance is telling me that there's more to life than the workaday world might suggest, and yes, I think that I can read this inspired thing or pursue this very resonant thought and begin to help myself to wake up. The information that we've gotten all along has been pretty simple, really, and I don't think that it is hard to understand. It's so simple, in fact, that it's sometimes a little baffling, but what the message is, really, is that we need to wake up to love and to live that truth that we all have heard, that love is what makes the world go round, that loving and being loved is a very worthy thing, and that indeed, if you love one another, you are loving the Creator, and you are becoming one with everything else in this world, because all of the world is one thing. The information that we've received has sometimes been called the Law of One, and that is the law that we are all things. The universe is one integrated whole, and we can be a part of the Godhead principle simply by waking up to the realization that that is who we are and what we are.
Well, thank you for that. That's very interesting. And certainly my understanding as well, when I read the material and you convey this to people, it sounds almost hokey to say love is the answer, because this is the message that all the masters have been sharing with us, and yet it's the one we don't seem to get either.
I think it really is too simple, Gina.
It's so
straightforward. But if you look at what we do in our lives and the choices that we make, if we ask ourselves where the love is in the situation, a lot of times that will tell us, well, which way we should go with that. And sometimes we're looking at a situation, say in a relationship, and we can't find the love in the situation. And then we know that we are the love in the situation. So we look for where our hearts are and where we can put our consciousness that will help bring things into a harmonious whole.
Well, when you started this whole adventure with Don and with Jim, when you started channeling the information of the raw material, did you realize that that would be the answer, that love is the answer, that the Law of One? Because you spent extraordinary time and extraordinary measures to get this information. In fact, the answer was so simple.
I did indeed. And it's interesting that they offer such a unified, simple, straightforward message. But the way that the entity called Ra offers a particular body of information called the Law of One is so sophisticated that it's the first philosophical system I ever saw. And I read philosophy in college. I took every course they offered. It's the first philosophical system that I ever saw that is self-consistent, that has an internal consistency to it. And the cosmology that it offers is sophisticated compared to most dogmatic systems. It's non-dogmatic, mm-hmm. but it offers an explanation for how things came about that holds water scientifically and to technical people. And I think this has been the great appeal of this particular body of material. To the listener, let me explain the difference between the kind of channeling that I do normally and the kind of channeling that I did when I was doing the Law of One channeling. Since 1974, I have been doing conscious channeling, and I really love these sources. They're very easy to read, I think, compared to the Law of One sessions. And they hold the same kind of truth. But there is a quality of clarity and certainly brevity in the Law of One channelings that stems from there being sessions done when I was in trance. And I never knew how I went into trance. It simply occurred because, as you said, Don and I had been working together since the 60s, but Jim McCarty joined us 3 weeks before the contact with those of Ra began, and we always felt that the reason that it began then was simply that Jim had decided to join us and had lent his unique energy to our communal efforts at research. So when he came, I was simply in the process of doing my teaching, and I was teaching a channeling student when this contact came through, and I just, as far as I was concerned, went to sleep. The resulting messages were enough more unusual and more interesting than the usual channeling that Don, as a scientist, immediately perked up his ears and began asking all kinds of questions, and that's the body of the raw material, is Don's questions as a scientist, an engineer, a physicist, and one who had been investigating paranormal matters since the middle 50s, since 1955. So his level of awareness of the kind of questions that might be asked was quite deep, and I think that it forms a unique body of material because he's asking a supposedly ET source about physics and about how light works, and not just about love and light and sort of that marshmallow fluff that you can get with channeling, but very careful questions and very precise answers. And I think that's really the appeal of it, is the same kind of appeal that you have in any philosophical system where there's a lot of information laid out in a fairly dense format, and it's appealing to a certain type of mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one can read that and realize that someone of your age and your experience and background could have never in a million years come up with those answers. I mean, some of them are quite mind-bending. You have to really try to wrap your hands around it and your arms around it and read it many, many times to process it and understand it. And it was someone like Don who was able to even glean the information from that and figure out what was the next question to follow up and answer, like some of the ones he got. It's like, where do you go with this? This
I know,
is really beyond the average mind.
And so if you could hear the way the Ra group spoke through me, it was a very narrow band contact. And so
mm-hmm.
they didn't have any inflection to their voice. It was all they could do to get the words out. So it was very quiet. And there was no inflection to the words, and there was really no way to tell when one sentence ended and another began. And yet his mind was so brilliant. He really is the greatest man I ever personally met as far as his intellect and his reach of intellect. He was able to field those incredible responses and somehow come up with the next thing to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I read it over to this day, I just marvel sometimes at his deftness and his quickness of mind.
Oh, I do too as well.
Yeah.
For the listeners that are just joining us, we have Carla Ruckert McCarty with us this evening, and we are talking about the Ra material, the Law of One series, the Wanderer's Handbook, and the Channeling Handbook, several books that Carla has brought forth. And you can find out more information about Carla and the work that's being done at LL Research if you go to www.llresearch.org, and there you can find all sorts of information about their newsletter, the meditations, and some upcoming workshops. Carla, for people who are not completely familiar with what we're talking about, maybe you can explain a little bit more, what is channeling? What is the difference between someone who channels and maybe someone who is a medium or a psychic? maybe you can help our listeners understand a little bit more what the distinctions are.
All right. In general, there are many ways and levels of receiving subconscious information in a conscious manner. We do that when we dream. If we keep a journal, sometimes we find ourselves opening up to insights that just came to us, and that is sort of the subconscious opening up to us in its guidance. The basic divisions, as far as I'm concerned, of the art of channeling are those types of channelings which contact entities from the inner planes of this planet, ghosts, Indians that used to live in the area, as people experience if they go to a seance, inner guides that are usually so chatty and charming and can give you specific information. People love to get psychic readings and hear about their past lives from entities like this. That doesn't happen to be the kind of entity that I have ever attempted to channel. I've always attempted to ask for the highest and best that I could receive in the way of guidance, which pulls me outside the inner planes and into the realms of, say, the outer planes of energy. Energy coming not from this planet, but from elsewhere than the local time and space. And that's really what sets our channeling apart, is that I have, for a long period of years, ever since 74, tuned carefully to the highest best, so that, say that we're all radio stations, I tune myself so that I can get the best radio station possible in terms of how good the information is that I'm getting. And then when I do receive a spirit, then I challenge that spirit, and I make sure that that spirit is who he says he is. I challenge in the name of Jesus the Christ. And people in the spirit world respond to that challenge as if to a very physical brick wall. If they do not come in the name of Jesus the Christ, then they simply have to go away. So there are ways that I have taken through the years, as I've learned more about channeling, to ensure that I'm doing the best I can do with my gift. Now, I think my gift was always to channel these outer sources. I think that other people have the gift of channeling inner planes sources, and they are like the other half, the other shoe, you know, that you have to have intimate information from your inner guidance, as well as more abstract, say, information from outer guidance. I think that both of those are very worthy. But, for instance, if one asked my sources, well, what was I doing in a past life, they wouldn't respond at all. They'd say this was not something that they could discuss without infringing on our free will. But if you ask the same source, well, what spiritual principles should I think about when I think about looking at my past lives? Then they can respond. You see the difference?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One's very specific and personal, and the other is more abstract and metaphysical.
Now, when you were doing the raw material, you were talking about being in trance, and my understanding now is that what you're doing now, you're not in trance.
Right, I'm in a fairly focused conscious state.
Is this something that you've learned to do? Is this something that you've learned to do just through the process, or is this just?
Yes, I have. I call it tuning, and I pray, I sing hymns, I call the archangels for protection. I physically count myself down from my age, which, believe me, is getting longer and longer to do. As I
get up well, it is for all
I'm
of us.
I'm going to be 64 this summer, and it's starting to get to be a long countdown. But as I count myself down to a more focused state, then I I've developed a way of going into my workroom and calling the Holy Spirit, which is my own personal guidance, because I'm a mystical Christian. That's my own path of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of ironic, I'm channeling an ET source, but I'm a mystical Christian. But then on the other hand, Jesus was an Essene Jew, and he started Christianity. So
right.
In metaphysical matters, you generally are your gift or your service to the Creator and to the world is ahead of where you are personally. You know,
mm-hmm.
You're just the instrument. You're just the messenger. And
right.
That's the way I would describe myself. But as carefully tuned and accurate a messenger as I can be.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were doing the channelings of the raw group, which is for people who may think of the raw person in ancient Egypt, maybe we need to clarify a little bit more about what raw is.
Oh, yes, let's.
because before we go much further, because we need to clarify who we're talking
yeah.
about.
Okay, first of all, we're not talking about the Stargate Ra, who is a thoroughly rotten person, and doesn't have anything to do with the Ra group that I channel, nor does it have much to do, except tangentially, with the system of many gods, of which Ra was one, in Egyptian mythology. They specifically mentioned in the course of the Law of One sessions that they were not to be confused with that system of gods, that they had certainly been mistaken for them, but they were not them. They described themselves as humble messengers of the Law of One, and they described themselves further as being of the influence of Venus and having graduated from the same third density there that we're trying to graduate from here, and looking around to see how they could be of service, and discovering, oh my goodness, here's planet Earth in a heck of a mess and headed for the end of a major cycle here, which is they call third density. We would call it planet Earth, you know, the everyday world. And really, you know, people haven't awakened and gotten ready for the next density, for fourth density, and what can we do to help? So they decided they would try to become Johnny Appleseeds of thought. They would hang out and wait for people like me who were able to tune in to the concepts that they were offering, and they would try to be of service, not directly but indirectly through instruments. And through channels. And so they have been doing that for quite some years now, and they're satisfied that the effort is worthwhile. In fact, the Ra group said, well, if we have only illuminated you, meaning Jim McCarty, myself, and Don Elkins, then we're satisfied, because it's just, you just need to plant the seed, and then that seed will grow, and then it will sort of spread, and people will begin catching on. And I've seen that happen. I've seen a huge global movement since I started doing this work in 1962. And it's not from the top down. It's not from the sophisticated intellectual people. It's from the grassroots of people who are waking up all over the globe and seeking very actively for information that's of help to them as they try to cope with these feelings that they have. I mean, people have very strong feelings. They're waking up feeling that they have a mission, feeling that they're more than just people living and dying on planet Earth, that they're somehow their spiritual beings that are sort of like, they're angels in earth suits, you know. They can't be limited by the way we think of human beings. And so they want to find a way to grow into these feelings of theirs. And so I think that's what brings them to sources like ours. I would never suggest that people leave a source such as the church, any faith like the Jewish faith or the Buddhist faith or Shinto or any path that is working for a seeker. But there are lots of times when those paths peter out for the seeker, and the seeker really doesn't have much in the way of guidance from the church of his childhood. So that's when the seeking begins, and that's when we are all on this road together where we're trying to find, you know, how we can fulfill the next step in our destiny. And really, mm-hmm. it's not a matter of setting sail for one particular thing, but rather it's a shift in attitude where you begin to wake up and say, well, how can I serve today? Where does love want to put me today? Come into my life, love, and let me have a day that I am serving you. And when you ask that, however you want to ask that, things happen in your life, and it becomes a real adventure.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the raw group. My understanding, this is like a social memory complex of how many? Is it 30 million or 60 million?
I'm not sure they ever told us just how many people were in the ROG group that it was communicating with us. They did say that at one time they had worked with people on this planet, and there were about 65 million people on planet Earth that were directly resonant with their message, meaning that they were part of the Ra group, the society that had decided to come to Earth and go through the process of incarnation so that mm-hmm. they could have the right to be a part of things on planet Earth and to make a difference here. The one thing that the Confederation entities such as Ra always say is that they can't interfere. The free will is absolutely paramount. It's sort of like the old Star Trek thing where, you know, there's the free will directive. You know, you can't interfere with a growing society, and they feel that way. And yet when you incarnate and you become part of the bone and the blood of Earth, you have the right then to speak your peace and live your life and see what you can do to help the light shine through.
Mm-hmm. Well, I must be one of those 65 million, because when I read the raw material, I was activated. I was like, wow, I felt like I found home.
Yeah,
it was the call for me, and it literally changed my life. It made everything make sense and made me realize who I am and why I'm here. And maybe for those listeners who are just joining us, I've written a book, Flying Between Heaven and Earth, and a lot of it is based on the foundations that are presented in the raw material and the Law of One, and to bring that forward. And in 2 weeks, as a matter of fact, Carlton, it's 2 weeks from today, I will be at the Great American Pitch Fest pitching my movie version of the book to the Hollywood studio executives and film producers to bring this forth to even more people, and so that they can also understand what is going on from a higher level. And your other book, The Wanderer's Handbook, well, that brought tears to my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a hard time trying to finish that because it really connected. It was just heart-wrenching for me because I connected to so many of the people that had shared their stories with you in over the years. And maybe you can elaborate a little bit more for our listeners on what the Wanderer's Handbook is.
Yes, the term wanderer was used by the Ra Group and other Confederation entities in talking about people who, as I described before, decided to enter the Earth plane and take Earth bodies and become natives of planet Earth so that we would have the right to help. And many, many people have done this. As a matter of fact, I think we're on our third generation now. I think the original wanderers were oldsters like myself, who were just very focused and very dedicated to service. And you see a huge outpouring of art, music, the pop stars that were writing spiritually oriented songs like the Beatles and in the late 60s. Now, this is part of that first wave of wanderers. There was a second wave of wanderers that sometimes gets called like Generation X or whatever. But there was a second wave of wanderers that were not quite so focused on service to the planet. They suddenly realized that this was a time of tremendous change, and they could help themselves to become better people by entering the very rigorous metaphysical atmosphere of, you know, the fiery furnace of planet Earth in late third density. And so you see a lot of people that are sort of very self-involved in their spiritual process, and what they need is not so much to be helped with their process, because they're doing very well with that, but to be reminded that they did come here to serve others, and that they need to kick it up a notch, kick that energy up a notch, and open up to the whole world, so that, you know, you have to realize when you work on yourself, you are working on the world. That's how you change the world. You don't go out metaphysically and try to change the world. You work on yourself. So the second generation of wanderers has that energy to it. And then the third generation are these indigo kids that we're seeing now. And information from our Confederation sources, especially the Kuo group, has it that these indigo kids are the first graduates of third density planet Earth. And what did they do when they got graduated and offered their choice of how they wanted to be of service in fourth density? They decided to come right back here and help the rest of their class graduate, you know. So these indigo kids that are so proactively who they are and system busters and all that, the reason that they're that way is that they're coming in with a lot of thinning of the veil, because they have fourth density DNA as well as third density DNA, so that they're able to pick up these truth vibrations and not experience them with the kind of challenges that we third density folk have. They can cooperate with them a lot more easily. I think we also can cooperate with them, not whether we're wanderers or not, but unless we're indigo children, we're going to have to work with ourselves in order to be able to open up fearlessly to these new energies, because they are quite a tsunami these days. But the wanderers in general are, in a way, it's a very specific and literal thing that people have come here, souls have decided to come here from elsewhere to help lighten the planet. But really, in a way, I wish that I'd labeled the Wanderer's Handbook a handbook for, you know, a manual for users of the human mind-body-spirit complex or something, because really, once a person awakens, a person becomes a wanderer. A person is no longer fully at home in third density Earth. And so there's this feeling of being a stranger in a strange land and not really having people to talk to. And I think that's really why I wrote that book, was that since 1983, I suppose, when most people began to see the raw material, there had been people just pouring questions to me about, okay, now I understand that I'm a wanderer, what do I do about it, and telling me all of these woes that they were having because they didn't fit in. So I wrote the book by analyzing. I went through thousands of emails that I'd gotten over a 10-year period, and I jotted down about 120 of the you know, frequently asked questions. And mm-hmm. So the Wanderer's Handbook is really the frequently asked questions from the Law of One series, just trying to write it out a little more clearly. And actually, I have discovered since 2001, when that book came out, that there is a whole group of people that I haven't really touched yet, making this information available. And that's the kind of person that is just a regular person that just, you know, has gotten through high school and started working and is just hasn't gotten into those intellectual spheres where it's real easy to read a fairly dense and scholarly work. So what I'm doing now is I'm trying to write a very plain-spoken and simple book about the principles of the Law of One, that if my Aunt Betty or your Uncle Joe wants to know about it, they can pick that book up and absolutely for sure be able to understand it if they want to. So that's what I'm working on right now. It's just trying to make this set of principles more available to people, because it really is a pretty simple system, and it really is a very helpful system, no matter what your background. I continue to follow my religion of Christianity, and yet I find the Law of One extremely helpful. It it's not a choice thing. The Law of One and the whole philosophy of it is like a big basket that has lots of places where you might fit, and they don't see any problem with any of the spiritual or religious systems of the earth fitting somewhere in a big basket of the Law of One, because, as they say, all positive information harmonizes. So if you are in a religion and you discover that your system isn't harmonizing and is tending to be exclusive and say very judgmentally, well, these people are okay, but because these people don't believe such and such, they're not okay. That is the kind of exclusivity that the Law of One suggests might not be in the best interests of the people that are seeking. So they really encourage you to follow a dogmatic system if it's working for you, but if it starts not working for you, they say, okay, well, drop the dogma, but keep the faith, keep the understanding that you are a piece of the one creator, and go from there. Don't turn your back on the things that you've learned in your youth. For instance, if you follow the teachings of Jesus the Christ and you don't happen to be able to deal with the dogma, you are still left with a collection of stories and parables that constitute a system of guidance that inevitably leads you back to love. What did Jesus say? There are two commandments: love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and all thy strength. And the second is like unto it: love your neighbor as yourself. And again, Jesus says, thank you for taking care of me when I was in prison. Thank you for taking care of me when I was hungry. And the people he's talking to say, but you weren't in prison and you weren't hungry. And he says, ah, but if you did this to the least of these, my brothers, you've done it to me. So he's trying, in a completely mainstream religion here, he's saying exactly the same thing as the Law of One. We're all one. We're here to love each other and bring each other home.
Oh, that's right. Again, let me just do a little station break here. Carla, this is Flying Higher. This is Gina Jones, your host this evening. And Carla Ruckert is with us. Carla Ruckert McCarty, excuse me. I have to add that in there. And if you'd like to call in this evening, we'll be taking calls now. You'll see the numbers on the screen here at BBS Radio Late Night. So you can call on the toll-free number here in the United States at 877-270-8714. The information that you have brought forth in the raw material, there are people like myself who are also working on trying to bring the message of this material to people in a way that they can understand. I call my book, it's a fiction, it's a novel, but I call it faction. So I've tried to recreate that information that you have brought forth in the raw material in a way that makes it understandable, and our dear friend Jean-Claude Coven has done the same thing with his book,
right.
Going Deeper, trying
and
to make
to thank
sense of
both
your life.
Of you, because I think that it's tremendous that people with your ability and skill have been able to have an activation, as you said, from seeing these basic thoughts and then find creative ways to tell the story in a new way that is accessible to people that I would never have access to. And, you know, we all have our individual gifts, and I just thank heavens for you and Jean-Claude and others like you that send me manuscripts, not daily or weekly, but probably monthly. I'll receive a manuscript from somebody that wants to know how close he's come to catching some of these concepts, because he's also been activated. He also wants to write about it, and it's like watching a field of flowers begin to grow, and you realize that you've been a part of something that has become quite a bit beyond you, and it's just it just warms your heart. I mean, I can't tell you how happy it makes me to, in my own lifetime, to be able to see this energy moving so quickly through so many creative people. And I really feel that it's this, you know, it's this kind of grassroots reaction that really there is an activation that's going on. So many of us, I think, we came in kind of encoded, you know, we're ready. But we have to be activated. And once we're activated, you say one word and, well, a whole book will flow out because of that one resonant thought. But, you know, then there has to be somebody around to plant the seeds of those thoughts. So, you know, I've done my share, and I continue to channel, and hopefully will for a long time to come. But I'm only one of many, many sources of channeling, creative writing, poetry, music, and all of these energies help us to move beyond the safety of what we already know and what we already believe, and begin to explore.
Carla, if you would explain to our listeners a little bit more. We're talking about graduation. We're talking about densities. We're talking about the indigos have returned to help the students graduate. What are we talking about? What? Maybe you can explain what we're referring to when we're talking about densities,
you know,
and we're talking about graduation.
Yeah. The cosmology that the Confederation offers is a cosmology of densities. They say that the creation has seven densities moving into an octave, which means that a whole new creation begins. And the first density is the elements, earth, air, fire, water, the elements like the chemicals. And the second density is plants and animals. That density is a density of consciousness, but not self-consciousness. It can move around. It can turn to the light if it's a plant. It can walk about on the earth if it's an animal. But it doesn't have self-consciousness. So third density is us. We are self-conscious beings, and we awaken to say, why am I here? And what's the meaning of my life? And that is the beginning of our metaphysical quest. That's the actual activating thing. We are here according to the law of one, according to the Confederation, to learn the lessons of love. We're here to learn to love each other and to let ourselves be loved in return. It's just as hard to allow yourself to be fully loved as it is to allow yourself to fully love. You know, it's difficult to accept love. Sometimes it's easier to love than it is to be loved. But at any rate, that's what we're here to learn. And we're here to learn how to use that love, because we can love ourselves and decide that we're the best in the world and we're just going to create our world so that everybody around us does what we want them to do, which is a polarity that the Confederation calls service to self. Or we can decide to follow the many, many versions of the Golden Rule that are offered in so many religions and spiritual systems that are just basically do unto others as you would have them do unto you, love one another, that kind of thing. And if you choose one of these polarities, their suggestion is that you will begin to approach harvestability. Just to skip subjects, you may have heard about 2012 and the Mayan calendar. It's also in 2012 the shifting of the classic Western astrological age from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius. There's a lot of energy around this particular date. And there's also a simple scientific energy around this particular time, and that is that we as a galaxy are rolling into a new area of space that has never been hit before by us, and we are experiencing new subatomic particles and bending of the rules of physics as we enter this space. All of these things come together to suggest that there's a time of graduation on planet Earth, that we've spent 76,000 some years learning how to love each other, learning how to make that choice of whether we're going to love ourselves and follow service to self, or whether we're going to love other people and try to serve them as a way of serving the Creator. And as we naturally die, the Confederation is suggesting, we will face a time of the opportunity to graduate from this density and to move into what they call the density of love, the fourth density. If you can think of a school of souls, we have been in the third grade. And we have had fairly limited options. We have been stuck pretty much in core classes. We've had to learn the basics. Loving 101, loving 102, you know, patience 103, you know, that kind of basic learning of how to make ethical choices, how to contact our guidance, how to trust the wisdom that is within us. And if we're able to walk those steps of light that they talk about in the process of graduation and end up on the fourth density side where we're accepting a much more full sense of the love and the light of the one infinite Creator, then we've reached fourth grade in the School of Souls, and we are able to start refining this choice that we have made. Okay, we're going to love each other. Now just how do we go about that? Because we're all so different and we're all so ornery. How precisely do we begin to harmonize? And, you know, I look forward to that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to be in fourth density and have more choices, be able to take some elective classes. But, you know, first we do need to get ready for this graduation deal. And what we do is, you know, we just wake up each day and see what we can do to make that day a day where we really loved the people that were around us and we really honored the situations that we are a part of. We really honored ourselves and took ourselves seriously enough to approach making any kind of ethical choice as almost a game, a godly game, where you realize that what it is you want to do is actually important. And so you're going to bring some deftness and some thought to it so that you don't simply make the knee-jerk reaction, but you ask yourself, I know this looks this way on the surface, but if you go underneath the surface, what's really happening here? And where is the love in this situation? How can I make a difference that makes people feel better, that makes the light flow better, that makes the energy feel harmonious? I think there are lots of little ways that we can do that.
Mm-hmm. And is that the choice? The title of the show tonight is The Law of One and the Choice.
Yes, that's the choice.
That is
the choice of polarity.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about polarities, we're talking positive and negative.
If you want to think about polarity really easily, you can think about what it takes to start a car.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have a spark. And the way you create power in your own nature is to make that choice very decisively. As long as you don't make a choice of service to self or service to others, you're sort of going along, being nice to people, but then being selfish, and then being unselfish, and then being selfish again. I'm being very simplistic here, but you have to be in order to describe this simply.
Right.
And you don't develop power. But if you decide, I'm going to be of service to others no matter what, and then you begin to get in situations where it costs you something to be of service to others, where you have to hold your tongue, where you have to deal with your own hurt feelings but not hurt somebody else's feelings. You begin to get into situations where you're developing power by your ability to use your choices wisely. And mm-hmm. as you continue in that same way, you know, day after day and year after year, through your incarnation, beginning to build your polarity, well, you're just beginning to radiate like a lighthouse. You're, you know, the light is starting to shine right through you, you know, and you become transparent. It's not you anymore. It's the Creator shining through you because you've made enough of these ethical choices that you know, where it is you want to be. And, you know, it may seem sometimes to the world, certainly it has seemed so to my family from time to time, that you make a foolish choice because you feel that is where the light is. But then, you know, you can look back after you've been doing this for a while and say, well, see, you know, this was the perfect thing to have done in spite of the fact that I couldn't explain it at the time. So you sort of begin to follow a path of resonance and begin to get that sense of yourself as a powerful person. And then the question always with polarity is, how can I use this power that I developed in the very best and most loving and wise way?
Right.
Good evening.
Now, this
Carla
information that came to you back in, well, almost three decades ago with the raw material, or they were indicating...
Yeah, it started coming through in 81. And actually, I'd been channeling the same sort of concept, but more generally since 1974. So it's been a long
time. And they were, when they were communicating with you, they were saying that in about 30 years there would be this event, which does coincide with the Mayan calendar, the end of the Mayan calendar, and a lot of these galactic alignments, a lot of these prophecies, and all different sources that are all pinpointing relatively the same period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yet back then you probably didn't even know about this. I'm sure at this point now you're
right,
sort of sitting back
and
smiling.
I had to do all kinds of research. I was
Carla, Tina,
for a long time.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi. Good evening. My name is Kim from Louisiana, and I had a question, Carla. I guess two things. I don't know your work specifically, but I know it kind of through just various routes. And when I was a teenager, my higher self or whatever said that to call this male presence raw. So that's just maybe an aside. What I was wondering is if you could give any light on the fact that in Don Miguel's work on the Four Agreements, he basically, at the end of Mira Carol Nelson's book, he writes a prophecy section. And her book is called Beyond Fear. And he basically equates Ra with Christ consciousness. And I was wondering what you thought about that.
Well, I can say that I challenge in the name of Jesus the Christ, and that the first time Ra came through to me, I was conscious, and I challenged that entity very thoroughly because he was a new entity, and he passed the test just fine. So I would say that I don't know if there's an identity in between the Ra group and Christ consciousness, but I would say that they are of that consciousness and are very congruent with that consciousness. And basically, I think a lot of people that are working psychically have told me that they use the Christ consciousness because it's the highest consciousness. It's not because they've been trained up as Christians, but because as psychics they can feel the difference in the energy. I think that
that's
Christ
really interesting because I'm
or cosmic consciousness is something that certainly Jesus the Christ was able to demonstrate in a very living way. But I think if you look at other inspired lives, you can find that same cloak of Christhood that has been able to be borne by other humans. And I think that all of us are potentially those who may bear that same consciousness as if it were a cloak, not because we are in and of ourselves a Christ, but because we are parts of the one Creator and able, if we wish, to vibrate at this level and to share that vibration with the world. I kind of see us all as instruments, as being able to be tuned up to be just in perfect pitch, and then allowing the spirit to play us.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kim, for calling.
I've enjoyed
Carla, your conversation. We have just a few minutes left on the show, but at my understanding, we don't have a show behind us. So would you like to continue on?
Absolutely. If there are questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Okay. Well, one...
Have a good evening.
Thank you, Kim, and you as well. Light and love to you. One perfect example of service to others is BBS Radio. This network is totally dedicated to service to others and bringing forth this information in many ways to help enlighten everyone and to help with the light workers and support them in their efforts to bring forth the messages that are coming through them. So we would like to thank Don Newsom and everyone at BBS Radio for their living example day in and day out, hour by hour of every day, service to others. Now, when it comes time for graduation, and I've had people ask me this, you know, we talk about the different paths and the polarity of service to others versus service to self. What is the graduation point? How do you know that you are, if someone really needs reassurance, how much they should be doing in their life? Because you still have to, you know, have a job and pay the bills and mm-hmm. kind of walk in two worlds. How does one know if they're on the right path or if they're dedicating their life enough into service for others to feel like they can confidently look forward to the days ahead?
Well, I think anybody that has the intention, that has set the intention to live honoring the ways of love and attempting to love those whom they come across in their life and to love the situations that are theirs to deal with, can be assured that they're graduating come graduation day. It's as simple as that. I remember Don, as the questioner in the Ra contact, asking the exact same question of the Ra group, and they quantified it naturally, being scientific in Don being scientific in nature, they would have to give him a quantity. And they said, well, if your mind is on serving others 51% of the time, then you've graduated.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, that's all you have to be there is just 51% of the time. And Don said, well, then what is it that you have to do to graduate service to self? Because there is graduation in the negative sense as well as in the positive sense.
Right.
And they said, well, you'd have to be thinking of yourself 95% of the time. And Don said, well, gosh, you know, how come it's so much harder to graduate in the negative polarity than it is in the positive polarity? And their answer was, well, it's not. It's just that to be 51% service to others is precisely as difficult as it is to be only 5% service to others. The dead zone is between the 5% and the 51%.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all, you know, just by nature, by our culture, by our training through school, we've learned enough meanness in us to be vibrating maybe 33% or 35% service to others, where we know that we want to be helpful to other people. We know we want to honor the Creator and be good stewards of our resources, but there are reasons why it's inconvenient to do that, so we don't do that. So what we just need to do is, as we get up for this one particular day, we just see what we can do. You know, I set my intention for this day. I'm going to be focused on the love in the moment as much as I can today. And when you set that intention, you're already over 51%.
Right.
Way over 51%. So it's
mm-hmm.
a matter of living that intention out through the day and not letting yourself get fatigued and becoming despairing simply because you see the many, many surface disturbances of our Earth world, where if you look only at what's happening on the surface of things, you figure we're doomed. you know, because mm-hmm. if it bleeds, it leads in the news. So all we see is the bad news. But actually, there's a huge amount of good news that's happening also.
Well, that's true.
If you
that's
think strictly
true.
Of metaphysics, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's
you,
true.
When you think of people helping people. Well, you see this coming through whenever there's some kind of a disaster. And people just pour out their desire to help each other. The hurricanes and other disasters will all, you know, bring out the most wonderful service to others energies in people, because that's who we are. You know, when we're poked with a stick, that's how we react. We want to help each other. We're going to get each other through. So I think it's really a matter of reconnecting with who we really are and what we really think, and not being so political and economically motivated and just sort of going along with the prevailing thoughts, because a lot of times the prevailing thoughts are kind of limiting and a lot of service to self energy is within them. So
mm-hmm.
you do have to kind of examine the wisdom of the day and see if it really resonates for you. It might not be part of your intention to follow that particular party line.
Exactly.
Go a different way.
Well, for anyone just tuning in, this is Flying Higher. I'm your host, Gina E. Jones. And we are going to continue a little bit longer this evening. We have Carla Rukert McCarty with us as we discuss LL Research and the work that they're doing and the books that have come forth through Carla's channeling and all the services that they offer. It can be found on their website at www.llresearch.org. And if you would like to call in this evening, we have some open lines. You can call toll-free here in the United States at 877-270-8714. I'll be glad to take your calls if you'd like to call in and if you have any questions with Carla. Carla, we were talking just a moment, and I used the term light workers, but in your understanding and of all the channelings and the information that's been conveyed to you, what about dark workers? Are there dark workers, or is it just the light and the dark within ourselves that are the ones who, you know, where we have our own battles and challenges? Or are there actually dark forces outside of us who maybe not want us to graduate, who want to keep us in the lower densities and the lower vibrations?
Well, yes. I mean, you can have it both ways, actually, because metaphysics is a paradoxical study. It's both inner and it's outer. The outer dark forces are just the outpicturing of the dark forces within ourselves. And let me say about the Law of One, that one of the things that the Law of One posits is that we are all things. We are every emotion, every feeling, every point of view. We have a complete 360 degrees of the light and the dark of human nature. So that if you look at the worst of the criminals of this earth, we are those people, as well as being the saints and the mystics that we would like to be. We have all of those things as part of our human nature. So you know, we have choices to make about what we want to manifest of that nature, and a lot of times, when we make those choices, as newly awakened spiritual seekers, we are so attracted to doing work in consciousness, to doing the meditation and the contemplation and the journaling and all of these wonderful things that we've discovered, that a lot of times we don't particularly want to spend any more time in the lower energies. And yet we need to keep moving, I mean, on a daily basis, down to the very basic energies, the basic energies of sex and survival, the energies that fuel our personal relationships and our group relationships, that come before you ever get to the open heart. Because unless you clear the energy body of those energies, then you're not getting full power through to the heart. And that means that you're not going to be able to make your choices with all the power that you really do have available to you if you'll just use it. And I think at the same time, you can't just say that the outer aspects of the dark forces are simply a projection, as Jung would say, an archetypal projection of our inner nature, because of the fact that people, including myself, have experienced psychic greetings that were very personal and very much organized to either distract me from the path that I was on or to take me out of this incarnation entirely.
Mm-hmm.
I, for instance, for a while during the raw contact, when I was walking, I would look to see if a car was coming, and I would not see a car. And I would start to cross the road, but a car would be coming, and I simply hadn't seen it. And things like this happened repetitively throughout that time. So there was no question but that there was a force outside of myself that would have liked to see me die. So I certainly can't dismiss energies that are that clearly unfriendly and hostile to what it was that I was doing. And I think that what happens with light workers is that it's not that we're great in and of ourselves. We're all bozos. We're all human beings. And no matter how much we would like to be better than human beings, you know, we are error-prone human beings on this side of the veil, not really understanding things and making many, many errors. But we, in doing light work, just in the intention to do the work, we, by that intention, stand close to the light in a metaphysical sense. In this world, thoughts are nothing, and objects are things. In the metaphysical world, things are nothing, but thoughts are objects. So when you set an intention, it's like opening a door. It's like doing something in the physical world as far as in the metaphysical planes. So I think that when we set our intention, the more purely and the more high we set our intention, the more high we set the bar, let's say, that means that we're standing close to the light. And when you stand in really bright light, it really casts a sharp shadow. And so I think when we stand in that light, all of our human frailties, the chinks in our armor of light, if you will, show up as shadows. And it's easy for the loyal opposition to take pot shots at those shadows because they're pre-existing. It's not that they can do anything to us. It's that they can energize pre-existing distortions. When I was not being able to see what was coming on the road, my bad vision was being energized, you know. But usually what happens is that you get thoughts energized that distract you from your purpose. As soon as you decide that you're going to love somebody, you're going to get that person is going to say just the perfect thing to take you back into your lower self, to be jealous, angry, upset, no, this person is not telling the truth, you know, to go into judgment and separation. So you have that choice there, and given that you've become a player of this game of life, you say, aha, I'm getting greeted psychically so that I will be distracted from my purpose, which is to graduate and stop eating McDonald's forever. You know, I want to go do something else. And so you remember, aha, I am not going to get distracted. I am going to be good to this person. I am going to be loving to this person. I'm not going to kick this person out of my heart. No way. No matter what this person does to me, I will love this person. You know, that's the one thing they can't take from me is my ability to love. And that's really the answer to psychic greetings when you get it. If you feel like you're being greeted psychically, well, just embrace with absolute faith that all is well, the whole situation. If it's a situation that's causing you discomfort, embrace the fact that made you feel discomfort, because that is the situation as it is, and all things are perfect. So you simply turn the other cheek and say, you know, I can deal with this, and I'm not going to break faith with you, whoever you are. So as you go through your day, these everyday situations come up. Maybe it's irritation with a family member or somebody at work, and that person is being used to greet you psychically so that you'll be distracted from your intention to love unconditionally all that you meet. They'll say, okay, love this, you know, and then somebody will try to cut you off on the expressway. Okay, you know, how do you deal with road rage, you know? Can you love that person too? Well, my uncle, Don Elkins' uncle, actually, Marion, proved to me once and for all that you can, because one day, probably 15 years ago, he was driving on the expressway, and a guy careened onto the expressway, cutting him off completely, and his only reaction was, as he jammed on the brakes, to say, okay, buddy, there's room for you too.
Well, that's the level out here in California.
Yeah, that's the level at which you deal with the question of psychic greeting. I mean, you know, when it gets really dramatic, I mean, there have been people that I've counseled that have, you know, had wolves sitting at the bottom of their beds all of a sudden, you know, snarling. And I'm afraid the answer to that is you've got to take that wolf into your arms and tell that wolf that you love it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you do that, the teeth are pulled, the fangs are gone, the fur hackles come down, and that wolf is your guardian and your grit, and is ready to help you be your strongest self. But you have to love that shadow side of yourself until it becomes light too. That's the essence of psychic greeting.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Do you feel like in reading the raw material, they talk about the Orion group? Is it your understanding that there are people here on the planet who are actually, you know, appear to be human, that are part of the Orion group, who are actually manipulating and controlling a lot of the things that are going on the planet politically or otherwise?
Well, it's hard to say. I wouldn't say that there are wanderers from the Orion group like there are wanderers from the Ra group, but I would say that on this planet we have had thousands and thousands of years of a repetitive cycle of empire. I won't go into what the Confederation information has about what happened before history, but our first recorded history, and it's a very shaky recording, it's Plato, is the story of Atlantis. And metaphysically speaking, a lot of information has come about that indicates that Atlantis was caught into this war of light and dark, and the dark forces there did take over the political system and used the apparently very advanced power that the Atlanteans had developed technologically for warfare, and ended up destroying their culture and their planet, their whole island, so that it sank. And these same souls then reincarnated in Babylon, in Rome, in the Holy Roman Empire, in Germany, and now in Atlantis too, which is what I call a situation that is not precisely national. It certainly, there could be said to be some forces within the United States that are making choices that seem very surface to self and very excluding of the rights and the honor of other people. But also, if you look at the world situation, where politics is almost subservient now to corporations, multinational corporations, which are very specifically service to self organized, just like the army is. You know, the person on top gets everything and makes the decisions for the people down below them. And the idea of everybody in that corporate structure is not to be thankful that they're slaves, but to keep trying to climb the corporate ladder so that they become the ones that are giving the orders. So you have that kind of negative energy, which begins to make it seem to people like it makes sense to gather resources and to direct everyone on the planet for their own good. And that's service to self. So you could say that the dark forces are among us, but whether or not they're, you know, agents from Orion or not is going to have to be somebody else's bailiwick. I'd rather not put a name to that and just say that we are responsible for the choices that we make.
Mm-hmm. Although when you start to look into works that's being presented and brought forth, a lot of information like Nick Begich and others who are talking about mind control, then you start to wonder, are we really going to be given the opportunity to make the choice when the time comes if, in fact, some of these technologies are implemented to alter or invade our personal choices, spiritually, physically, mentally? I'm not sure. And I wonder if with this information that is coming out and that is being utilized and things like HARP and other technologies, you know, is it our responsibility as light workers to shed light on what is being done so that there are people who may not know of this stuff to become aware of it so that they can, in fact, make these choices for themselves?
Well, Gina, that's a dicey question.
I
think that if certainly you can't ignore the stuff. You can't ignore the things that are coming out. You need to respond. To them, but the reason that it's dicey, I mean, if it was just a matter of sharing information, that would not be difficult at all to say, well, of course we share this information, let everybody get this information and go from there. But the whole tenor of the situation changes when you realize that one of the main things that the negative energy wants to do is keep you in a state of fear. So if you share the information in a way that partakes whatsoever of fear, then you're simply helping them out by sharing the information. So I think what you have to do is become so settled within yourself as to what your polarity is that when you do share the information, you share it from a very peaceful, conscious, sincerely peaceful awareness that all is well. And you say, here's what we came to love. Here's the situation. But it doesn't mean that we're doomed. It simply means this is what we're up against. So
right.
We can break the enchantment. I mean, it is a kind of enchantment to live in fear. And we can break that enchantment by our own conscious choice. But I think that the voices that speak of these things need to be voices that are powerfully loving and that are reassuring and are saying, look, this is what we came to love. This is not our enemy. This is simply the way the shadow happens to picture right now. So we do not have to choose to be enchanted by this fearful construct. We can choose to break the bonds of this by our intention, because always within us we have what is much more powerful. I love that beginning figure in the Gospel of John, where they say, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God, and there was darkness, but the darkness could not put out the light. And I think that's the case. As long as we are just going to let our little candle burn, it's going to be seen for miles and miles, and it will break the enchantment of these darker forces.
Yes, and I agree wholeheartedly with what you've said, but I do feel like that people need to be aware, and I think a lot of people are just not aware of what's going on outside of their small little world, you know, maybe in their home or their family or their business, you know, from a higher perspective. And they may be caught off guard when, you know, stuff starts to happen, and they may not understand exactly the dynamics and how they may be being played out or being pawns in a big chess game of the light and the dark, and not understand that, and then go into the fear. Just like you as a channel, when you're putting your antenna out there, you know that there is light and there is dark, and that's when you you know, ask the question if they are of the Christ consciousness before you,
right.
you know, engage that. Because you as a channeler are aware of the fact that there is positive and negative out there.
Absolutely.
And so, again, I feel like in some ways it's important to share with people what's going on so when the time comes they know which way to turn. They know what is going to lead them on the path that they ultimately want to go on. Because I think in the days ahead we're all going to get squeezed a little bit and find out really who we are.
I think that's already happening.
Yes,
you know,
but
it's
not
over.
The
wave of truth has been hitting us and hitting us and hitting us. I mean,
yes.
A lot of people are experiencing all kinds of difficulties in their lives. And then really it's just the undeveloped parts of themselves are coming up and saying, please, please, develop me, develop me. I need to be part of you so that we can all walk into the light together.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's a question of how to integrate your personality.
Right.
Bring all of those unredeemed parts of yourself into the fold.
Well, I had just two more questions to ask of you. I know it's getting really late over there in Kentucky, and I wanted just to... In reading the Law of One books, I felt such a connection with Don Elkins, and I was in the airlines. Unfortunately, I was with Delta, and he was with Eastern later on, and I wish I had had the opportunity to meet him. I have met people who did meet him and actually work with him as a crew member.
Mm.
And in your gift and your ability to channel, have you ever just had contact with Don since he passed on and just to say hi, or how are you doing, or how are we doing, or has that ever happened?
It has indeed. First of all, I saw him 3 days after he died for the first time, and he was golden, radiant, laughing, enjoying himself. He was fine. But in a deeper sense, when I tune, one of the things I do is I ask for the positive, not the positive, but the feminine and the masculine aspects of the Holy Spirit to come and sit with me, one on my right hand and one on my left. And it's a part of the preparation for beginning the challenging process before I accept the contact and start to channel. So previously when I had asked for the male aspect of the Holy Spirit, I would get a person I didn't really recognize. He was British. He wore a hacking jacket. He was very nice. He was fairly small. He had a little mustache. You know, I just got this impression of him. And he would be the male aspect of the Holy Spirit. But about, I suppose a couple of years after Don passed, when I asked for the male aspect of the Holy Spirit, well, here came Don in his, you know, light blue shirt and his khaki pants that were a little too short for him because he's 6.5 feet tall. And his hands even felt the same when I grasped his hand. And he's been there ever since as the male aspect of the Holy Spirit. He's part of my guidance system.
Mm-hmm.
So I spend intimate time with him every time I channel. It's wonderful to be with him.
Oh, I'm sure it is. That just sounds like a beautiful relationship.
Yeah.
Be sure to tell him I said hi.
Well,
though I never met him, I just felt such a connection with this man. It's really strange how that came through in reading the material. And,
well, he was a powerful person and just such a good person. I really can't ever do Don justice, but I will say that ever since he died, through the years, dozens and dozens of people have written to explain how Don has related to them in their lives and helped them through difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
So he's very active on the inner planes as part of people's guidance who have responded to the book and so forth. So he's doing good work.
Well, good. I'll have to invite him in over here. I could use some help right now.
Well, you know, that's one great secret, Gina, is just to ask.
Oh,
you know,
I know.
Whatever it is, if you're asking for the Spirit or if you're asking for discernment, just, you know, set the intention and ask, because there are a lot of energies in this metaphysical part of creation that are just poised to help, but they have to be asked because of this free will.
Well, my final question for this evening I was reading today, and I heard on Coast to Coast last night with Art Bell, Whitley Strieber was on there and was talking about a movie that's coming out in a few years based on a book that'll be released in September called 2012, The War for Souls. Are you familiar with?
No, I haven't heard about that work? Project.
Yes. Well, Whitley Strieber, you know, has written, I think, about 20 different books, novels, and nonfiction as well. And this story is certainly going to be a sci-fi thriller where there's a mysterious alien presence that suddenly bursts out of the sacred sites out of all over the world and begins to rip human souls from bodies, plunging the world into chaos never known before. This is the premise of the film. I'm reading this from Amazon.com. I'm not making this up. I'm reading this from Amazon.com.
No, I totally believe you.
And so there is a scientist or someone who actually goes to a alternate Earth in a parallel universe, an alternate universe, and come to find out this apocalypse is happening to every Earth and every dimension on every parallel universe, alternate universe, whatever you want to call it. And so he connects with himself in another universe to try to save this from happening. But it becomes there's sort of a surprise ending where heroes emerge and villains reveal themselves. In the end, there's a completely new and unexpected something that happens. So it's certainly interesting and quite compelling. But I hope that my book and the movie that will come forth and hopefully the TV series subsequently will be able to help set some balance to that, because I tried really hard to, you know, convey to people that fear is the thing that will keep them from moving forward, because you can't be in love and in fear at the same time, that one is actually the opposite of the other. So many people think the opposite of love is hate, but it's really not. It's fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be that trust and that faith and the love and the creator and the creation, which is all of us, that will move us forward. I always kind of use the analogy that we're in our third chakra and we're in our third dimension, and to move to the fourth chakra, which is the heart chakra, to be in love, to qualify us for that next level, to get us to graduation point, that's where we have to be, and you can't be in both.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I think, you know, we live in the midst of a lot of darkness, and yet at the same time, we could be in the worst battlefield in the world, but with love in our hearts, you know, we stand up and take a bullet so that the soldier next to us can live. And we've demonstrated love all over again. So you can't keep the light out. And talk about a fear-based movie. that really sounds like it's going to be an extravaganza, but at the same time, that is an outpicturing of, you know, the worst fears of the human soul. So given that we have those fears, you know, then we can maybe even do some intellectual thinking and analysis. Why do we have this fear? What is it in us that knows that there's a light in the dark? So, you know, that might bring us to make that positive choice, not because we're scared, but because we realize that this wouldn't be coming out in the popular media unless there was something to it down deep, somewhere.
Right.
There might have a shred of truth here, and the shred of truth here is that big things are happening, but we can meet them completely fearlessly. I love the part in the Bible where I think it's St. Paul, and I'm not crazy about the guy normally, but, you know, he had his moments, and he said, if I live, I live in Christ, and if I die, I die in Christ. So whether I live or whether I die, I am in Christ, and Christ is in me. So even if some horrible soul-snatching somebody were to come after me, I would stand on my love, and I would be invincible. So I have no fear. And I think, you know, we need to begin to stand on our metaphysical ground and be fearless.
Well, if there's this one thing for you to say, if you could speak to every single one on the planet, what would it be? If you haven't already said it, maybe you could just sort of, recap your message to humanity.
There's a little song that we sing sometimes when we're tuning in our meditation groups, and I'll just say the words because it says it all. Love one another as I have loved you. Care for each other as I care for you. Bear each other's burdens. Share each other's joys. Love one another and bring each other home.
That's very nice. That is very nice. I can see why you do that. And bringing each other home. That's what it's all about.
It is the gathering time, isn't it? Yes.
It is indeed. Carla, I want to thank you. The words seem inadequate because of what you've done for me and so many in allowing yourself to be a channel of this communication from higher dimensions to share with us these messages that do seem so simple, but yet they are timeless, and it really is what it's all about. But the sacrifices that you made, not only in time, but physically, I understand you suffer with arthritis and a lot of the things that came about through the channeling. I just want to thank you for doing so much for humanity and for continuing to hold the light. And if anybody wants to see what Carla Ruckert does every day, just go to the llresearch.org website and you can see from morning to night meditations. The newsletters, the books are online. Quite a few of them are for free just to get this information out to shed the light. So thank you
yes,
from
we
the
have
bottom
it all
of my heart.
Free.
Thank you so much,
Gina, and I thank you for your service as well.
It's a
wonderful thing to see.
Well, you're the one. you shine the light on that one for me. So I will keep you posted on what happens in the days ahead, and just thank you for the blessings. And LL Research, by the way, for everybody, stands for Love and Light Research, which is truly what Carla and Jim and Don and Gary and I'm sure your cats as well at some level are all participating in. So thank you for your service to others. It's really a blessing. And we'd like to thank everyone again at BBS Radio Late Night for this truly action of service to others put forth every day so that we can share love and to help each other to move forward in the days ahead so we can all graduate and have a big party when we get there.
Oh, yes. Everybody
absolutely.
In.
Yes. Well, love and light to you, Carla, and keep in touch. And for everyone listening tonight, thank you. Love and light to you, and go forward in love and faith and trust that everything will be just fine. So good night
Amen.
From Gina Jones at Flying Higher. Good night.
Good night.